RNN.
Well, we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means.
Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel.
Tonight's featured show is Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel. Welcome to the Republic News Network for our live national broadcast. You may call me Kelby, and tonight I'm going to be acting as your moderator. The RNN, which stands for the Republic News Network, has been doing this radio show since 2010, and it's always been a friendly introduction for the people of the United States Corporation. Here we go. It's true. The United States is a federal corporation, and their exclusive jurisdiction is in the District of Columbia. The Republic government was simply a bunch of U.S. citizens that in law don't have access to the Bill of Rights, and they realized they wanted to be Americans as our founders and our law provided each and every one of us. See, we've been hard at work since 2008, and since 2010, we have successfully re-inhabited the original government vacated under Lincoln in 1861. I know, it's hard to understand. Don't worry. We are law-abiding, peaceful Americans and very pro-government, and we love our country. You can consider the Republic members are tired of the corruption that we see every day. See, we found in the law that there is two forms of government here on the land, and we did something about it. We are people. Mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, we have families just like you. We simply found some truths, and now we're sharing these important truths with the rest of the world. So get ready to hear things that sound amazing, and get ready to understand that you, too, are about to be a part of history. We welcome each one of you to Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel and your Republic, if you so choose. But before we go into our broadcast tonight, please bow your head in prayer.
Lord, we just want to thank you for this opportunity to once again expose really crime and evil. Bless the people on the call and protect them. And we pray this in your son's name. Amen. Mr. Happel, I yield the floor.
Well, thank you, Kelby. Tonight we have Mary Fanning and Alan Jones are back to give us an update on the deep state as they've uncovered very much material on the things that have happened not only in Port Canaveral, not only with the importation, let's say, of terrorism into the country through Port Canaveral and Club K and some of the things that they've reported on earlier, but we're also going tonight to be talking about the Uranium One. We're going to be talking about things that are starting to surface now in the mainstream media that have been covered up for the last number of years. And it's programs like ours that are starting to expose these things. And we're getting to the point where they can't keep the deep state buried any longer. Mary Fanning and Alan Jones have both been doing a tremendous amount of research over the last couple of years into much of what is making the deep state happen, and they are exposing a lot of really treasonous activity, and tonight we're going to be talking about a lot of those treasonous acts, and we're going to be getting into Uranium One and some of the things that have happened there as well that are now finally starting to see the light of day. So with that, I'd like to welcome Mary and Alan. And Mary, if you'd like to give our listeners just kind of a quick overview of some of the things that you've been working on and a little of your background, and then we'll go on to Alan.
Good evening, Dan. It's so nice to be with you. Our latest piece is The Real Russia Story. And this follows on a piece that we did for the Center for Security Policy, an occasional paper, It's 90 pages long, The Perfect Storm. However, there's a page of key findings and chapters, and it's something that you can go through and not necessarily read the full 91 pages, but you can see through the key findings the important points. The paper is well worth reading because it's informative as to what is going on and who the players are in this country that are redistributing America underneath our noses and without our permission. So that goes directly to the Clintons and former President Barack Obama. Following on, we've done several other pieces on Port Canaveral. We've done the whistleblower tapes on a secret surveillance system that was put together by James Clapper and John Brennan. But our latest piece is the real Russia story, Port Canaveral, Project Pelican, and Uranium One deals that connect through the Jaffers. The Jaffers are the family that received the 35-year lease at Florida's Port Canaveral at a military complex, which is critical infrastructure. The Jaffers Company Gulftainer was given a cargo container terminal lease, 35 years, with no CFIUS overview. This happened under the Obama administration. Hillary Clinton was involved with the Jaffers. Interestingly, this past week, the Jaffers and their financial arm that Hamid Jaffer started, the Abraj Group. The Abraj Group is a Pakistani fund, and the Wall Street Journal reveals that Bill Gates Foundation, as well as the World Bank, are suing to open Abraj Group to open their books for a forensic accounting. They'd like to know where their $1 billion went. So this connects to the same people who were handed a lease at Port Canaveral with no CFIUS review, no national security oversight.
Now, this is just an incredible story, Mary. And, of course, we've had you folks on before to talk about just how deep the deep state is. But it's gotten to the point where every time we think we're getting close to the bottom, the bottom drops out. It's like Alice in Wonderland. The hole just keeps getting deeper. And these people are just absolutely incredible. I mean, it's like they can't find enough corrupt ways to do things. So I really am looking forward to tonight's show because we're going to have so much fun on this, just exposing to America what really has been happening with this deep state and with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. So, Alan, I want to welcome you to the show, and thank you very much. And I know you and Mary have worked together on a number of these articles, but I do want to give you an opportunity to talk about some of the work that you've done as well. So if you would please just tell our listeners some of the projects that you've been working on.
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting us back on your program. It's always an honor to share these stories with you and your audience. I've been involved in investigative journalism since around 2010 and started at the Washington Times Communities, which was a forum for citizen journalists to submit work and have editorial review from the Washington Times and actually publish at WashingtonTimes.com. That was my introduction to investigative journalism. I broke a story about Barack Obama's Selective Service records and what appears to be a cover-up at the Selective Service headquarters in Washington involving his microfilm records of the actual form that he supposedly filled out. Covered a lot of other stories there and started working with Mary a few years ago, and this Gulftainer story at Port Canaveral has really evolved into a tremendously expansive project that's been carrying on now for about 3 years, and we've written probably dozens of articles at this point about Gulftainer and the Jaffers. And like you said, it's like Alice in Wonderland. It just keeps getting deeper and deeper.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Well, I know you folks have been on to talk about Club K and the fact that we've had so many, literally the ports at Port Canaveral have been open to anything that wanted to come into the country with virtually no supervision, and the Jaffers have been connected with the Russian firm, Rascom, and they are the builders of a project called Club K, which is basically putting cargo containers together that can have anything from intercontinental ballistic missiles to cruise missiles to nerve gas to virtually anything contained within this weaponized container. And these things have very possibly been sent all over the United States. And it's just absolutely amazing. Of course, Claire Lopez and Dr. Peter Pry, Mary, with your help getting them on my radio show, we had a program about electromagnetic pulse weapons, which are also something that is very likely to be able to be brought into our country through Club K and these containerized weapons systems. So now, I don't want to get too carried away with it, but now I want to start talking about how Hillary Clinton and how the Clinton Foundation and the White House and all these people have been playing these little footsie games together, allowing all this stuff to happen, and they try to lay all this stuff on Donald Trump, on President Trump, as if somehow he's the person that's been dealing with the Russians, when in fact Hillary Clinton and Uranium One, they were right in bed with the Russians. Mary and Alan, would you like to kind of tell our listeners some of the stuff that you've uncovered?
Well, what we found were the Jaffers, who received a 35-year lease at Port Canaveral with no CFIUS review. That was dismissed. It wasn't carried out. That was partially because the man at CFIUS, the gatekeeper, the chairman of the CFIUS at Treasury, and just bypassed the deal. So that man was Ayman Nabi Mir. He is an ISNA operative, Islamic Society of North America. His father was one of the council chairmen who created ISNA, Islamic Society of North America. So you can understand how the deal was bypassed because they have someone in place. Now, understand that the Uranium One deal, when that went to CFIUS, Breitbart reported that they gave the information, but they mentioned Canada and they never mentioned Russia. So the full information was not on the table. Keep in mind, those on the CFIUS board, Hillary Clinton, Jack Lew, this in some ways you have to consider was probably plausible deniability, that they had someone who bypassed or didn't give full information so that they didn't have to take the responsibility for what came next, right? What happened is that as we look into the Jaffers and who they were in business and their financial relationships and joint ventures, the first thing we found was that they had gone into business with Rostec, which is that owns 100% of the shares of Russell Boren Export. Russell Boren Export exports a cargo container that looks like a standard intermodal container. However, the top opens up electronically. It's managed by satellite so that there's no time to distinguish that something is about to happen. And also, it would shoot under our radar in this country because these containers can be shipped into the country. Then the top opens, managed by satellite, and this Russian Trojan horse new weapon system can then shoot off the Russian caliber missile or nuclear missile, nuclear-headed missile, or a EMP. Now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, who you've had on, Dan, says
yes,
that this, the Club K is a game changer because it has the ability to attack the United States from within the United States. Now, keep in mind that under the Obama administration and his Department of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson, though Congress had mandated 100% of cargo containers coming into the country are inspected, they brought it down to less than 2%. So we have a nuclear mastermind and his brother who worked for Saddam Hussein, who created a miniaturized nuclear weapon. That miniaturized nuclear weapon is strikingly similar to the one we're seeing on North Korean television with Kim Jong-un. That's important to remember. Mm-hmm. But it's also understand that Saddam worked with Kim Jong-un's father for a delivery system. And they were building factories in Iraq, the North Koreans, at the time that we entered with Operation Iraqi Freedom. Mm-hmm. So they had a previous relationship that's established. And suddenly we see this miniaturized nuclear weapon that's known as Beach Ball. Now, we found at the Wisconsin Project and in CIA documents the diagram and the plans for Beach Ball, this miniaturized nuclear weapon. And as I said, what we're seeing with Kim Jong-un is strikingly similar.
Right.
So then we find that the Jaffers have gone into a joint venture with Rosoboron Export, the company that is wholly owned by Rostec. That's the state-owned weapons manufacturing, the Russian state-owned weapons manufacturing, that manufactures this new Trojan horse weapon system that looks like a standard cargo container. Then you have the Jaffers, who have long worked with the Russians, starting when Dr. Jaffer and his brother Hamid Jaffer were in Iraq. Dr. Jaffer Dia Jaffer was working with the Russian ambassador to Iraq, Yevgeny Primakov. He was known as the bear in the desert because they sent him in to help put the nuclear weapons together in Iraq with Saddam Hussein. Yevgeny Primakov wasn't just working with Dr. Jaffer, however. He came in, and under the perestroika deception, he started putting together something known as the Islamic Bloc. That was to put together these Islamic countries and to have them work toward terrorism and using terrorism to defeat the United States. So death by a thousand cuts. Continue to attack us through terrorism.
And, Mary, I have to make this comment. All these things are happening by enemies of the United States, but it appears to us, certainly at this network and through programs like yours, that we've got more enemies within than we do enemies without. I mean, it's just unbelievable that our top leadership have been part of the cabal that has allowed this sort of treasonous activity to happen. You're exposing that, and that's part of what the FISA report and many other things are starting to expose.
I think people have such a hard time understanding who is the enemy, what are we really fighting. But when you understand that Russia has, and the Soviet Union before that, had gone into the Middle East to weaponize hatred against the United States, seething hatred, to create terrorism against the United States. And when you understand that they're using, that Islam is the sword of communism, they are using radical Islam to attack the United States, to implement not just communism, but global communism.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that goes back to the changes that took place after the perestroika deception. And the mad philosopher, Alexander Dugin, in Russia, worked closely with this Yevgeny Primakov. And they were looking for a new empire. And they felt that the way to do that was to use radical Islam against their enemies. And if you're looking at what has happened in Europe and to NATO, and you're looking at Europe being flooded with radical, you know, these are not families that are moving into Europe. These are military-aged men. You look at these boats coming upon their shores, they're all military-aged men. And that's not by accident.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is all part of, and you mentioned the perestroika deception. Would you maybe tell our listeners what that book is about and who wrote it, and then maybe we can explain to our listeners. I you certainly understand this, so do I, that the Soviet Union never really died. The communism never really died. It's just kind of gone underground, and you know, part of the so-called United States winning the Cold War is a deception. And they've been working very hard to make sure that Americans believe that, and we've literally been asleep at the wheel. So tell our listeners a little about the perestroika deception and the writer, the author of that, and how that was written.
Well, the perestroika deception was, as you said, you know, to pretend as though they failed and to pull communism underground. But all this supposed capitalism that was happening in Russia was not happening. It was all state-owned. It was oligarchs. They were all connected to the KGB or the GRU and then the SVR. Everything is state-owned. And so there are eight main oligarchs who own everything, right? Mm-hmm. And they all had been in the KGB or working with Putin and Sechin, and the pretense that communism had died, they just started calling it something else. And Gorbachev came over and said, oh, we're your good friend, and get rid of your nukes, and let's have some more treaties, and you guys disarm and believe everything that we say, but they're not actually doing it. And the reason we knew that is men like Golitsyn, as he wrote the Perestroika Deception and told people in a book what was actually taking place. Do not believe this. They're not disarming. And so Gorbachev was actually sent here as part of that scheme. Now, the EU and putting the EU all where there, it's controlled by a one body rather than each country having control of their own borders and their own country was part of the plan. When Gorbachev arrived in Europe and was speaking of the EU, he referred to it as the Soviet EU.
Mm-hmm.
And that should give you a hint as to his mindset.
Right, so, exactly.
This is global communism and flooding these countries, taking down their borders. And, I mean, these are armies that are coming into these countries. And, you know, I'm not sure, but it seems to me that everything that Obama was doing, bringing people into these countries, and you've heard the stories, they knew some of the things that were coming in here, and he did nothing. And that's by design. Now, think about it. Imagine Ronald Reagan. Imagine Ronald Reagan knowing that there are 35 no-go zones of Islamic camps that train with weapons to attack in this country and leaving them in place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they don't put them in the cities. They put them in rural areas where there's not a lot of sheriffs or police to manage them. These guys are working in these no-go zones. And the people that they're bringing into them that are Americans, they're bringing Islam, radical Islam, into the prisons as well. And those are typically the people who are going also into those no-go zones, which should be really comforting to people.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, your connection between communism and radical Islam, that's been certainly in the intelligence community, that's been well-known for a very long time. Mary, I'm going to make a quote by Mikhail Gorbachev, and this is a speech that he did before the Soviet Politburo on November 2nd, 1987. This was before the fall of, supposedly the fall of the Soviet Union. And this is a quote, and I've done this several times on this show, but it's worth repeating. Quote, "In October 1917, we parted with the old world, rejecting it once and for all. We're moving to a new world, a world of communism. We shall never turn off that road. Comrades, do not be concerned about all you hear about glasnost and perestroika and democracy in the coming years. These are primarily for outward consumption. There will be no significant internal change within the Soviet Union other than for cosmetic purposes. Our purpose is to disarm the Americans and let them fall asleep," unquote. That's Mikhail Gorbachev. And Mikhail Gorbachev, when he was deposed supposedly as a Soviet premier, one of the things that happened is that he came to the United States under George Herbert Walker Bush's tutelage, let's say, or supervision, and was given an office space and residence at the Presidio in San Francisco. And he was given literally hundreds of millions of dollars by Ford, Rockefeller, and different foundations to start what is known as Green Cross, which is the world's biggest environmental organization. It's kind of the godfather of the environmental movement. The whole Soviet system moved into the environmental movement, and lo and behold, the next year, in the summer of the next year, we developed UN Agenda 21 and the sustainability treaties, and George Herbert Walker Bush signed on to that. And we've been going downhill with this stuff ever since. The environmental movement is part of the same process that radical Islam and these other groups. Communism is not dead in this world. It's stronger now than it ever was. And if we don't believe that, we need to take a look at all the countries in Africa and South and Central America that are now living under strong socialism or communism.
And we've never seen a foothold of Russia in the Middle East as we do today. Barack Obama virtually handed them the Middle East. His bogus, you know, red lines in Syria were just, you know, he always played a double game. You'd never believe a word that he said. Watch everything that he does. Your listeners, if they want to understand what's taking place beyond the perestroika deception, they should also look at Mikhail Pasipa's book, Disinformation. Mm-hmm. These are both by men. Pasipa was a former spy chief. And, you know, these men came here and they exposed everything that was going on. And they told that they used disinformation. It's worth noting that the military, the Russian military, that 7 out of every 10 military members is a propaganda expert. So they simply brainwash us and let us believe, you know, that we're all good friends. And like George W. Bush said, he just looked into Putin's eyes and he saw a good man. Well, you know, maybe he was still on drugs. I don't know, because no one else sees that when they look in Vladimir Putin's eyes.
And incidentally, I have to say that Pasipa is also, he was a three-star general in, I believe, the Romanian army, wasn't he?
In the Romanian army. But beyond being that three-star general, he was in charge of their KGB, basically.
Yes.
So
yes.
He's an interesting man, and it's worth reading his book, Disinformation. It's a very important book because he grew up with his father in his ear, you know, sort of telling about the United States and freedom. Yet he went into the military in Romania and he trained and he was very successful. But as he lived that his life at the top of, you know, a top spy chief, a top general, he was always, you know, was dual thinking, always thinking about someday maybe I could get to the United States and be free. And he, as he watched the things that were taking place, the horrors in front of him, he knew that what he was a part of was a dark, bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Alan, I don't want to leave you out of this discussion. I know you have uncovered a great amount of information on Barack Obama's involvement in different things. I saw that just recently Project Folsom, which directly connects the British intelligence and a request by Barack Obama on the 28th of August in 2016 to spy on, well, at the time, candidate Donald Trump, and that was renewed then by Susan Rice. The request was renewed by Susan Rice all the way up until he actually was sworn in as president. This is unprecedented. How in the world can these people get away with this stuff?
Well, former President Obama seems to operate like a well-trained operative, possibly trained by a foreign nation. And he's very careful with all of his steps, and he sets many layers between his directives and the actual actions that are taken, setting up layers of plausible deniability and separation. I think that's indicative of how he operates, because in this FISA warrant situation, it's taken months and months before his name actually was attached to any of this. It's now starting to be uncovered. But we can assume that in everything else he's been involved in, from Gulftainer to Uranium One, he's set up disposable intermediaries with plausible deniability who can take the fall and protect him. Now, expounding on what Mary was talking about on the perestroika deception and the state-owned companies, if it's all right, I wanted to get into that a little bit.
Please.
So the image of the old Soviet Union, of course, you know, was this, you know, 1950s industrialization period where they were building these big factories and, you know, building these bland-looking automobiles, and everything was very drab. After the perestroika deception, they kind of retooled and created a new perception. I'd call it a faux capitalism, because it's not really capitalist. It's state-owned companies and basically a communist top-down economy. But these companies have, you know, annual reports. They have logos. They have slick advertisements, or rather corporate videos. And to create the impression, you know, that they have shareholders, that they're publicly traded companies, but they're really not. Let's give an example. Rosneft is the energy company for Russia. Russia's main industries are energy and weapons. And energy can be broken down into petrochemicals, you know, oil and nuclear energy. Now, the Jaffers have been doing business with a lot of these Russian state-owned companies. We've identified three of them so far. Rosneft, which is the oil company, it's 71% owned by the Russian government. The second biggest shareholder is BP, and then there's a few other investors, but it's over 70% owned by the Russian government. The Jaffers are also in petroleum with their Sharjah-based Crescent Petroleum, which is an affiliate of Gulftainer, the company that received the lease at Port Canaveral. Now, they've entered into a joint venture. So what you're seeing here in the perestroika deception is that they kind of pulled back, and like Mary said, communism went underground. You know, there was this perception that the former Warsaw Pact countries were now independent. Eastern Europe was moving toward capitalism. And a lot of that did happen. But Russia has actually been, by stealth, expanding their footprint. And it's starting to look like they are not only going to reconstitute the former Soviet Union, but something much bigger than the former Soviet Union that would encompass probably all of Europe and all of Asia. This is the Eurasia, which is something that a man named Dugain has talked about a lot. But the Eurasia is not going to be the end of the Soviet sphere of influence. It looks like they also want to get into Latin America and the Middle East. Now, who are they partnering with in the Middle East? The Jaffers and Crescent, Gulf Caner, Crescent Investments, all the different Crescent companies. And so the Middle East sort of was a vacuum after the U.S. had lost all this at great cost, blood and treasure in Iraq, over 4,000 American troops, and then just an astounding number of American troops lost limbs and came back severely wounded with traumatic brain injuries. It was heartbreaking how many troops sacrificed and families sacrificed so greatly over there. And then there's the massive cost of that Iraq war. And now in 2009, right after Obama got in office, the first thing he does is claim that they couldn't reach an agreement with the Iraqi government, so that the U.S. pulled out. You probably saw the convoys, you know, coming through the gates, leaving Iraq. Now, this giant vacuum led to the rise of ISIS and other situations there and the Iranian influence. But the Jaffers stepped in with a joint venture with Rosneft. And they actually gloated about this on a slick CNN video in which they said this was, you know, Russia's first step into the Middle East. So what we're seeing here, even though Primakov has passed away, those after Primakov are joining back up with the Jaffers and building up a relationship in the Middle East in joint ventures. Now, these also, they're doing this in Latin America. The person to watch is Igor Sechin. Putin may be the president of Russia, but his number two, who's possibly even more powerful with him than Putin and has been with Putin since the days where Putin was the mayor of St. Petersburg, is tremendously powerful. He was in the KGB with Putin, and they've teamed up on all these projects. Now, Sechin is very active in the Middle East and in Latin America. He's been to Cuba talking about doing projects with Rosneft. He's been to Venezuela. He's very involved in weapons. But what's going on with Gulf Caner is very important. The first deal Gulf Caner did was, well, they all happened after Obama came into office in rapid succession in about a two-year period. They struck a deal with Rosneft to do oil exploration in the UAE, and then also look at other opportunities for petroleum exploration in the broader Middle East and North Africa area. Then they did the deal with Rostec, which Mary just talked about, which Rostec is a huge technology and weapons company. They make some of the most high-tech weaponry the Russians have. And Rosavoron Export, like Mary explained, is exporting this new Club K container system. So you have Rosneft, you have Rostec, Rosavoron Export. Now here's the third deal that they did, which is the subject of our latest paper, which you can see at Big League Politics. And that is a deal with a company called InterRAO UES. InterRAO, that's spelled R-A-O and then U-E-S. When I said that the most important areas of Russia's influence is energy and weapons, while Rostec, of course, is weapons, InterRAO is energy. Now, the way Russia is expanding its influence back over the former Soviet Union and beyond into Central Asia is through the power grid. And the power grid is basically a monopoly, the state-owned company Interrail UES. So they run these power lines all over the former Russia, Eastern Europe, and Central Asia, running conventional or coal and thermal and hydro power plants, but also nuclear power plants. Now, Interrail UES, at the time that they went into a deal with the Jaffers Crescent Investment, was owned by Rosatom. Does that sound familiar? Well, it should be, because Rosatom is a Russian state-owned company that owns Uranium One. They took a 51% stake in Uranium One through that controversial deal, which is connected to the Clinton Foundation. The Jaffers are also connected to the Clinton Foundation. So here you have basically the Jaffers through Crescent Investment going into business with Rosatom, the owner of Uranium One. Now that brings us back to this character, Igor Sechin, considered possibly the most powerful man in Russia at this point. Sechin is the chairman of the management of Interrail UES, the power line company that runs all these power lines and also nuclear power stations. Now Sechin is also the head of Rosneft. So the Jaffers are in two deals with Igor Sechin's state-owned Russian companies, brings them very close to Uranium One deal, and both the Jaffers Gulf Tainer deal and the Uranium One deal are connected to the Clinton Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly the point that I kind of I'm glad we got to that, because you did a terrific job of describing just exactly what we are all, at least, you know, the folks on this call are all concerned about, and that is the fact that the Russian communist system, the Uranium One and the Jaffers and all these things are interconnected, and now it's starting to be exposed. And it's exposed that people in our own government are part of this plan as well, to basically force us into a one-world communist system that is going to be in control of virtually everything. And they've allowed our national security and everything else to completely take a back seat so that they can get this program in place. And President Trump and his message of America first and national sovereignty has challenged this whole plan in such a way that no one really ever imagined that it could possibly happen, because they almost had the lid on this box. And Hillary Clinton's election as president following up Barack Obama would have assured that our country would have been dead as a constitutional republic. So with that, let's talk about the connections of Uranium One and how all that came into being, and how the connections with the Clinton Foundation and the enormous amounts of money that have been funneled through the Clinton Foundation. Mary, do you want to handle that one?
Well, the Clintons, I think Hillary had it right. If they don't stop Donald Trump, they'll hang. And that's why they're so concerned right now. We've just seen that the Clintons, and if you've read Clinton Cash, $145 million went to the Clintons. That's a big number, but it gets worse. When we looked into the Jaffers and they were connected through business-backed education and the Varkey Gems Foundation, through 2,300 donations, they raised $70 billion in promissory notes that go to the Clinton Global Initiative. Let me repeat that, $70 billion in promissory donations. Now, one wonders, and they put it on their website, and their pictures of McGee Jaffer with Bill Clinton at Business Back Educations with the Varkey Gems, and they put it on their website that they're raised $70 billion in promissory donations to the Clinton Global Initiative. What would you give the Clinton Global Initiative $70 billion for? A port? The whole country?
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's an incredible amount, $70 billion. But this is bubbling up. And you know, this is fairly complex, everything that's taking place, right? And so mm-hmm. I think things are coming out. And as it's coming out, you can see the left is they're blathering on about, you know, everyone on the other side is lying. And it's great to read the perestroika deception. It's great to read disinformation because you know that they mirror what they themselves are usually doing. It's very Alinsky, Saul Alinsky, the radical. Mm-hmm. And so what they're accusing Trump of being in bed with the Russians is a joke compared to the things that took place with Hillary Clinton and the Russians. And when you're looking at the Jaffers and you're looking at them at Port Canaveral, it's important to realize that the Jaffers are Russia. They have worked their entire lives with Russia, their entire adult lives, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Hamid Jaffer, the principal of the Crescent Group, he was before our Congress, three committees, and the Treasury Department being investigated for his oil for super weapons scheme, where he was trying to put it through FINA gas for, you know, they called it put a tyrant in your tank, so the American people would be funding Saddam Hussein's WMDs. So there's Hamid Jaffer of Gulf Tainer at Port Canaveral, was under investigation by the Treasury and three congressional committees running Saddam's WMD. And he was not just running the WMD, he was also in charge of procurement. So he was procuring everything for the biological, chemical, and nuclear program. That information came out of CIA documents. Think about that. And that a port where a military installation, where our nuclear submarines, our space, our air, our doomsday plane, all are, that they would mm-hmm. give this family a 35-year lease with no national security review.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible.
It's incredible. And then you go and you look and you see that the Jaffers are in business through Rosoboron Export for the exporter of the Club K. And then you see that they are also in buildings in business with their joint ventures with InterREO US, which is Rosatom, the state atomic energy that received 20% of our uranium, a critical nuclear asset for our national security. This is like if Clancy had written this book, people would say this is so bizarre that it couldn't possibly be true. This is so over the top.
Yeah, it is. It is. Mary, I have to tell you, my wife is outspokenly anti-political, but mm-hmm. and she loves to read novels. She reads book after book. She'll read three or four novels a week, and I tell her, Ingrid, all you've got to do is just follow what's going on in the real world. It's so much more interesting than any novel could possibly be. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Absolutely.
What these people have done.
This is beyond imagination. And if you keep up really with the things that are taking place, you're not going to find it in the mainstream media because that's Mockingbird. The things that are taking place on MSNBC and CNN, that's a joke. They are bringing mm-hmm. us anything but the truth. But Anchorage should look and to see the things that really are happening. Pay attention to patriots like General Paul Valley and General Thomas McInerney. These men are speaking out. They are fighting for the life of our country. And if other Americans do not stand up and object, imagine this. Can you imagine if our fathers who fought in World War II, if they were watching a nuclear mastermind who they have on tape talking about his intentions to put a nuclear weapon in Washington, D.C., imagine our fathers just sitting there and mm-hmm. putting up mm-hmm. with this.
No, absolutely. No, it wouldn't happen. And the thing that's so hard to understand, Mary and Alan, is that what's at the bottom of this? The Clinton Foundation and the Clinton family have collected billions. And we're not talking small billions. We're talking, you know, the numbers that I've seen could be as high as $300 billion that they have amassed in various, you know, funds and programs around the world. I mean, they've gotten filthy rich off of this.
Well, if her intent were just about money, but anyone who studied or studies Hillary Clinton mm-hmm. understands that she's evil. It's just that simple. It's not just the money. No. She's evil. It's about power.
And she's a you know, she's a cohort. She wrote her thesis on Saul Alinsky. She's you know, she has been a dyed-in-the-wool communist her entire life.
Yeah, she has. And mm-hmm. you know, and that's perhaps how one should gauge the truth that they get from the mainstream media, because you're certainly not hearing about that. She was with Saul Alinsky from the time she was in college. But understand who mm-hmm. Saul Alinsky's patron was. Who were the people who were funding him initially? The Grahams at the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
So
right,
when the Grahams
right.
are funding a, you know, Saul Alinsky, who wrote Rules for Radicals, which he dedicated the book to the number one community organizer, Lucifer, that should stop you in your tracks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it should. Absolutely. And you're right. And now there's a new movie out portraying Mrs. Graham as being, you know, this great patron saint that was exposing what was going on in Vietnam and Watergate and all this stuff. I mean, it's just amazing to me how deep the rabbit hole goes and how many people that are at the top of our political and let's say business elite have been tied into this.
Well, a lot of people couldn't possibly understand what's taken place and what is going on. But then there must be those who think that if they don't play the game, that they won't be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose, you know, there's those who are going to sell their soul based upon that, but it's important to, people need to wake up. They need to, you know, you can't stand up against something if you don't know what you're standing up for or against.
Right. Yeah.
So people need to, you know, they need to become autodidacts. They need to educate themselves and gain a real education about what's taking place before our country is gone, before freedom is gone, before our children. Can you imagine living under communism? It won't just be like, you know, some soft communism, because once they have full control, it will be communism like North Korea, where the lights mm-hmm. go out. Imagine what you're leaving your children and your grandchildren to. It's wrong
oh,
not to stand up.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mary, I'm right now in the process of reading another book about South Africa, but if we want to see a template for how they have done exactly what they're trying to do in this country, look at South Africa. And agreed. Nobody was a big fan of apartheid, but you take a look at what happened after Mandela took over in 92. And incidentally, all these
evil
things,
communist.
Think about it. He was absolutely a communist, and he was a terrorist. And the thing that always points back is to me as amazing is that all this stuff happened in 1990, 91, and 92. What an incredibly important time in the history of the world, because that's when all this stuff started, this transition started to happen.
Well, think back. You know, Mandela had died months before his funeral ceremony. That was all kabuki, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And had friends in the country and others who well knew that they had to finish the road from the airport. That is also a moment where they're trying to brain train people that Mandela was a good man. Mandela was in prison for putting bombs on buses to kill white school children. That is why Mandela went to prison. Look up what his people that followed him were doing to the white farmers across that country. Look at how they ripped them open their guts. I've never seen such horrific images. Maybe don't look at them because they're hard to get out of your head. But Mandela was an evil man. His wife was evil. The idea that Barack Obama, the celebration for Mandela was just twisted. Mm-hmm. It was an awful thing.
And the ANC and Mandiki and Zuma and the people who have followed up after Mandela, I mean, the country is literally on the verge of collapse financially.
Oh,
it went from being one of the most developed countries in the world, not certainly the most developed in Africa, to now being third world status. And it's because the communists got the system and our national leaders handed it to them.
Well, look at Barack Obama, who he partners himself with, you know, his fist bumps with Chavez, going and backing, which was illegal for him to do as a U.S. Senator, Robert Mugabe. Who gets in bed with people like this?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, while we may not know much about him from his, you know, all of his sealed records, we do know an awful lot by who he associates with. And they're really some of the darkest characters on the globe, if not the darkest characters, frankly. You know, I think, Dan, you love quotes, and let me give you one. Soviet power plus full electrification of the entire country equals communism. This is Lenin's slogan. Did you know that?
I did not know that one.
Yeah, Soviet power plus full electrification of the entire country equals communism. That is why Putin is moving into all these countries with power plants, and he's connecting one to the other. He will own the countries and being able to manage them through the electrification, through the power plants of the grid. He will implement full communism by being in control of these countries.
Wow. This is amazing. Well, Alan, I haven't intended to keep you out of this conversation, but what I want to do, we're kind of getting toward the end of the show, and I want to allow Mary, you and Alan to talk about the things that you're writing and give our listeners a location where they can go to learn more of the stuff that we talked about tonight.
Okay, so like I mentioned previously, our latest article, which discusses the deal between the Jaffers Crescent Investments and InterRAO UES, the Russian power grid company, is up at bigleaguepolitics.com. It's a fairly new news site, but it's moving up very quickly. And there, Patrick Howley is a veteran of Breitbart, along with some other folks who came over from Breitbart, have been doing a great job over there breaking stories. So it's sort of a baseball theme. If you like baseball, you're going to love bigleaguepolitics.com. Our previous stories have also appeared at Breitbart. If you look up Gulf Tainer and Breitbart, you'll find a couple stories over there. And then the largest body of our work is at Mary's site, and that is theamericanreport.org. And then those stories are also published at 1776channel.com.
And the Center for Security Policy.
Right, right.
We can't forget that, you know, that is a conservative think tank run by Frank Gaffney, and Claire Lopez is the vice president, and you've had Claire on. She's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
She spent 30 years in the CIA. She's one of the white hats. And so we work with Claire and Frank at Center for Security Policy. And you can read the What Could Possibly Go Wrong occasional paper, and also our latest, The Perfect Storm. But right now, it's important to understand the piece that we just put out, that the Uranium One deal, through these downstream subsidiaries of the Jeffers companies, that the Jeffers are connected not only to the Port Canaveral deal and to the Club K, but also to the Uranium One deal. We are having an operation run on us, and the whole country is awake and doesn't have a clue.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why they need to listen to this program. And I really ask our listeners to go back. If they aren't familiar with some of these stories that Mary and Alan are talking about, we do have those programs archived on the Republic of the United States.org website under Connecting the Dots, and also on my website, which is danhappel.com. And so if you're not familiar with some of these stories, please go to those programs that Mary and Alan have been my guests, as well as, like you say, Claire Lopez and Dr. Peter Pry and Charles Ortel and a number of others. We've got some great stories on there that help people connect the dots. So Mary and Alan, thank you again for being part of this broadcast. I mean, I think this was an amazing expose, and I thank you very deeply from the bottom of my heart for the American people, for the work that you're doing, and I just pray that you will continue to do that work, and that our Lord will watch over you and make sure that you're safe and kept beyond the reach of those that would like to silence you. So with that, I have to sign off for the show for this week, and I turn the show back over to you, Kelby, and thank our listeners, and please tune in again next week.
God bless you, Dan.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's show with Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel. God bless. Good night. We'll see you next Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific.